I just think there is nothing like the last minute and a half of that song.
Here's the thing. Andy Carl is an Emmett and a Warner at the same time, you know? He can go both ways. Get you a man who can do both, okay?
Who didn't want to be Elle Woods or who doesn't want to be Elle Woods?
You can't do half loop stitch on China Silk. It'll pucker.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking all about Legally Blonde, the musical. This episode feels so overdue because we have loved it, the show, for so long. And I feel like it's always been on a list of like, we should do an episode, but never did an episode. And here we are.
I feel like it truly embodies the spirit of our podcast because it is a cast recording that we listen to on road trips all the time. Well, we could still do road trips, but in the car, we have a long drive ahead of us. It's like, what are we putting on? It's Legally Blonde.
And it's also a cast recording that Shara hates. So when the three of us are in the car together and we decide what show we're going to dive into, you and I are always like, well, obviously Legally Blonde. It's an outnumbered situation in that sense.
We're doing it. It's happening.
So Shara, for you listening to this episode, we're sorry. Here's Legally Blonde. But yeah, this is a musical that I love. As you can see, I have official Legally Blonde merch. And I think we should start this episode the same way we start every episode when we dive into a show, is our initial relationship with the show. So when was the first time that you heard about, not the movie, but Legally Blonde the musical?
I would say at a dance competition. I think I saw a dance to Bend and Snap or Oh My God, You Guys. Definitely somewhere there. I just feel like Oh My God, You Guys was like a really prevalent song just everywhere. I don't know. It was a dance competition. It was in dance class. It was at theater camp somewhere. That was definitely the first song I heard from it.
Yeah. I think for me, the first time I had heard about the musical was the iconic TV show that MTV put on, The Search for the Next Elle Woods. We'll talk about that show a little bit later because there are things that we want to get into with it. But that was definitely the first time I had heard about the musical. But let's talk about the movie for a second, because this is a movie that I think is like in my top five of favorite movies of all time.
It's a very important, it's a formative movie in a lot of people, I think, our ages' lives. Just thinking about it in preparing to talk about it here, it was about a girl who, you know, could realize she could be pretty and smart, you know?
Yes.
That sounds so stupid, but it's like, you don't have to just be one thing. You don't have to just be smart or just be pretty or just be funny. You can be all of these things and be successful. And I don't know. I think it was like really important watching that as a young girl.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've seen that movie maybe 100 times. I could probably quote you almost every single scene. I also think it's like Reese Witherspoon's greatest role that she's ever played. Obviously, it's her most iconic role. And as a young girl, obviously, like, look around me, my favorite color is pink. And to see a character that just like embodied that to the fullest extent was so exciting. I feel like I probably watched that movie way too young and didn't really understand like half of the stuff that happened.
Definitely didn't get it. So I have the DVD, the first and second DVD, and the DVD case was like pink, if you remember. And
isn't it also holographic? One of them?
Mine isn't holographic. Maybe I don't have the special edition you have.
Extended.
But mine isn't holographic. I have the DVD for one and two, actually. But so the case is pink. And I am someone who's obsessed with and loves DVD special features. And really, the tragedy of not getting DVDs anymore is like I don't get the special features. Though I guess they're on YouTube now, but whatever. And I would watch the Legally Blonde special features so much. And this was my introduction to a very important person. Mark Platt, producer of Legally Blonde, the movie. He was in all these like things. And this is the first time I didn't know who Mark Platt. When I knew who Mark Platt was in theater, I was like, oh, the producer of the movie Legally Blonde, my favorite.
That's
movie
so that funny. Something else that I have always associated with Legally Blonde whenever I hear it is the song Perfect Day. And I love that song. It's actually so funny. This is like kind of a behind the scenes into my editing brain. But we put out a podcast trailer on YouTube and I was like, we need some sort of like background song. So I'm like searching through for like a beat and all of a sudden Perfect Day comes up. I'm like, if only we could use this song, it would be so great as like an instrumental, like upbeat. It's such a fun song. And whenever Legally Blonde is on TV, which like it's on TV all the time, and if you get to the very beginning and you hear the sun's up a little after 12, it's so exciting. Like I have to stop, I have to watch the whole movie.
It's when like she's like brushing her hair.
Yes. And it's like and all the girls. Tiffany, and the Tiffany heart necklace.
Yes, the return to Tiffany. Oh, we all wanted those.
We all did to be like Elle Woods. But I think you're right in saying that she is like almost the perfect sort of role model that you could be both smart and pretty, which I know again like sounds weird to say that, but who didn't want to be Elle Woods or who doesn't want to be Elle Woods?
Yeah, I just like love the character of Elle Woods, and I think musicalizing this story, this movie, is so smart. Like it elevated the material. I think it was like a great source material to adapt into a musical.
I mean, let's talk about that for a minute. I think that this, in terms of movie musicals or movies into adapting them into musicals, I think this one is really strong and probably one of the stronger ones in the last few years in terms of like straight adaptation. There really isn't that much that's different from the movie script to the musical script. I think it's a pretty true adaptation, and I know that there are so many people that will say that this show is stupid, but like I love it, and I think in terms of just like straight adaptation, it's pretty good.
I don't think it's different from the movie, but I don't think they were afraid to be different from the movie, if that makes sense. Like they weren't so beholden to making sure this line was in it, making sure this moment was in it, making sure all these certain things. Like, there are, like, you know, iconic moments when she comes out in, like, the Playboy Bunny outfit. You know, you have to do it. But it never felt like, oh, we're just hitting this note because it was in the movie. It all felt like it was in service of the story they were telling on stage. I think the masterful thing that it did is it captured the tone of the movie and that it's like funny, like it's almost like a little bit satirical, a little bit over the top, but not like crazy over the top. Like I think I've said the same thing about Heathers, both like Lawrence O'Keefe musicals, is that they captured the tone. They have like the right balance of like funny and seriousness and going over the top but not going too over the top.
Which I think is honestly the main problem that I had with Mean Girls was I was expecting like a Legally Blonde sort of adaptation that was like smart and the music is really good, and that exactly as you said, they didn't hit those lines that Mean Girls feels like they needed to hit those lines in order for it to be like this is a musical about Mean Girls. So I do agree in that sense, and I think that my expectations going into Mean Girls were so high because of how much I enjoyed Legally Blonde. But yeah, I think it's a really smart score in general, and we'll get into that when we talk about some of the songs. But I think we have to talk about the video that we have seen, and it's amazing that we have this, and it's the MTV Pro Shot of Legally Blonde with the original cast.
Yeah, we are so lucky to have that. We're so lucky that it was made. You know what I mean? It's random that it was MTV, and like we'll talk about Search for Elle Woods and how that kind of related, but that they took a musical based on a movie that was very well loved and then aired it on MTV and filmed it on MTV, and like Lauren Conrad hosted the commercial
the whole Hills. The whole cast of The Hills was there.
I really only remember Lauren Conrad, sorry. And that it's like pretty readily available to watch, you know, whenever you want. This is like
it's on YouTube.
Is like a blessing for this musical, you know?
I mean, now we do have some pro shots, but that was almost the first one that was filmed in such a great way that wasn't just like standard audience. It actually went in and we saw all of the different scenes and all of the cast, and there were some little snippets of behind the scenes. So I agree. I love that it exists, and I've watched it so many times.
But also it was one that was marketed towards young people. You know, yeah. By airing it on MTV, by having it hosted by Lauren Conrad and whoever else from The Hills, by making an event out of it, they target it towards young people. A lot of the other filmed productions around the time, it's like airing on PBS and, you know, it's great to have those, but they're not, their audience is much more limited than what we were getting on MTV, and being able to expose this musical to young people and maybe be a gateway was such, like, literally so amazing. And we're so lucky to have it, because I've only ever seen a university production of Legally Blonde. I've never seen a professional production of it, but I have seen this filmed version so many times, and I feel like I got to be in that room and I got to experience it in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. So this pro shot aired on MTV because The Search for Elle Woods was on MTV. Surprisingly, not hosted by someone from The Hills. It was hosted by Hailey Duff.
She was the star of Hairspray on Broadway, okay?
As she says in the first episode.
So many times.
Yeah. Oh, so I, as I said, watched this every single week, The Search for Elle Woods, to see who would be the next Elle Woods, because Laura Bell Bundy was leaving the production. And I happened to go to New York the summer after the show ended and saw Legally Blonde on Broadway, which was my first Broadway show, at the Palace Theater, R.I.P. Palace Theater.
That old playbill style, too.
Also, something that we had discussed was that playbills have become a lot thicker in the last few years just because of the advertising. That's a really thin playbill. Really? Yeah, it's so thin. But yeah, I saw Legally Blonde in August of 2008, and I just need to tell the story because this was the most random. We were not going to New York to just go to New York. I'm pretty sure we were stopping by from like a road trip to Florida, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So my mom and I went to go see Legally Blonde, and my brothers and my dad did not want to see this show. So they were just roaming around New York, being tourists, whatever. And I'm pretty sure because at the time, none of us had iPhones, so no one was sending pictures, like, during the day. So when we met up with them again, they were like, you'll never guess who we met. Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato. And me being a fan of, like, that world, but also this world, I was, like, so torn of, did I make the wrong choice going to see Legally Blonde when I could have met Demi and Selena? Thinking about it now, I don't know. I actually feel the same way now. Like, maybe
Here's the thing. If you had gone with your dad and your brothers, maybe you would have gone somewhere different and they never would have seen Demi and Selena. So
yes. They were coming out of a hotel. I'm pretty sure the Jonas Brothers were performing somewhere in New Jersey and Demi was opening. That was the Camp Rock year also. So it was just it was a great time. But yeah, so I saw Legally Blonde on Broadway with Bailey Hanks, who was the winner of the Search for the next Elle Woods. And I just think, like, being in that show, one, as I said, is first Broadway show, so that was really exciting in itself, and, like, buying the merch, and I was wearing hot pink velour track pants for literally...
I have seen that picture.
But it was, like, for the purpose that I was going to this, and, like, that's what Elle Woods wore in the movie, so this movie was so impactful in my life that to actually see this show as my first Broadway show was very exciting. And I love the show, and I don't think, as we discussed on the mic right before this, that Bailey is the correct choice for an Elle Woods, but it introduced me to Christian Borle and Andy Carl and Orfe and Richard H. Blake and all of those people that I now love and think about all the time. So that was like kind of a really exciting first experience for me.
Talking about that cast, what a great cast. I mean, you know, you didn't see her, but Laura Bell Bundy as the heart of the show, star of many a Hallmark Christmas movie. She is like such a great Elle Woods. I think just like the pitch of her speaking voice even is like fantastic for Elle Woods. And she's like so good at like comedy and like physical comedy and just the way she was brought. And then when you think about her singing so much better and just the way she like nails that moment, I love her.
Yeah. I agree. And I think also seeing Christian Borle for the first time in this show and not knowing who he was before that, mm-hmm. and then obviously becoming the fan that I am now of him, mm-hmm. I just wish that I could go back and sit in that audience now.
Appreciate it.
Feel those emotions. Yeah, exactly. Appreciate it for what it was. And then I also saw it again when it came to Toronto in 2010. It was a tour cast. Mm-hmm. Michael Rupert, who plays Callahan, actually did the tour. So he's been with the show for like a super long time. And then I think Lily Blunt had like super success in the West End. So it hasn't come back around in over 11 years now, obviously, but I would see it again.
I mean, I would see it again, but I don't know if it's a show that needs to be revived. You know, I think it's like very good at regional productions. I think it's regional productions where it should live. I don't think there's, you know, many different ways to do the show, if that makes sense, you know, but so I don't know if it needs a professional big time revival, but I think it's great for schools to do. I think it's great for, like, that's what we saw, or like regional houses to do, because it's a great draw for audiences. And it's just really fun, and the music is really fun, and you can have a great time with it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into some of the music. We have, as we said, listened to this cast recording on many a road trip, and I have not actually gotten back into this cast recording until in preparation for this episode, but I was saying to you the last time I think we listened to this all the way through was on our road trip back from Chicago. Not last summer, the summer before.
Almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah. And it was that, even that time, listening to it all the way through was like, this is really great. I really love this cast recording. And I think that that all starts off with the opening number, Oh My God, You Guys.
Oh my God, oh my God, you guys. Looks like Elle's gonna win the prize. If there ever was a perfect couple, this one qualifies. Oh my God, you guys. Oh my God, this is happening. Our own homecoming queen and king. Finally she'll be trying on a huge engagement ring for size. Oh my God, you guys. Oh my God.
I think we talked about this in our opening numbers episode. It's just so fun. Also, speaking on that cast, Annalee Ashford is Margot on that cast recording and is so amazing. There's something
about distinct voice. Like, you hear her voice.
I was going to say, you know it's her. Yeah. But there's also something about the way that all of the girls sing in that opening number that's kind of like what we had talked about in our prom episode of like sounding younger. And I think it's all in their nose of the like, Dear L, he's a lucky guy. It's just like
the Valley
in
Girl,
their nose.
The Valley Girl tone. No, it's like they're acting, you know? It's like part of that comedy. They're all doing a bit of an accent. They're doing a bit of a, like a, I don't know, weird, funny thing to make you laugh right from the jump, right from that first moment. That number, thinking about the fire pole moment where she changes her outfit.
I still don't get how she does it. I really don't understand. This woman is in curlers, has a face mask on, and wearing a robe. And when she comes out, and it's not a cast change. There is not a character change that's happening there.
The mask is gone,
hair's in a ponytail, and she's wearing, like, the cheerleading outfit. It's crazy. That was such a fun, quick change. But also that set in general. And I think that, I mean, in a regional production, it also works if you do it the right way, but it's the windows that are opening and the passing of the card. And it's very true, I think, to the beginning of that movie when they're all thinking that Elle is about to get engaged and they're signing this card and putting perfume. It's just so fun. And I really do think the end of Oh My God, You Guys, obviously when we meet Elle and she puts on the dress, another incredible quick change.
You can't do half lip stitch on China silk. It'll pucker.
Iconic. And obviously the iconic Courtney, take your break.
Courtney, take your break.
There is a video, we will put it in the description for our YouTube listeners, of regional productions of Courtney, Take Your Break. If you want to laugh for a good 15 minutes, watch this video in full.
Courtney, take your break.
But yeah, I love that whole opening number all the way until she meets Warner. And even in the movie, the way that she meets Warner is the exact same. And he's this like heartthrob that you fall in love with and you are along for the entire ride with Elle until we find out that he's actually a trash person.
Alaric Saltzman.
I've been watching Vampire Diaries, so there's been a lot of Alaric Saltzman in my life right now. I don't even know what the actor's real name is.
His name is Matt Davis.
He will always be Warner and Alaric, and that's Saltzman. It.
I just remember when I was watching the Vampire Diaries at the time, just being like, that's Warner from Legally Blonde. And it's just like, they're different characters. They're so different.
But it's true. It's like, it's just character association with an actor, and he will forever be those two characters. It does not matter if he's in anything else. It's just those two. But yeah, I love that whole opening number into that initial meeting. I think it's so smart and done so well to stay true to the movie.
Okay, but then let's talk about something like Sirius, which is the best.
It's so good.
Again, this is what I'm talking about with the humor. You know, it's using... Like, comedic songs are hard, and it's, this guy is taking himself so seriously, and yet the song is so funny, and the way where she starts to sing, and he's like, I'm not finished, and then she's doing a backup for him.
Yes.
And then he uses a line that's from the movie, you know, less of a Marilyn, more of a Jackie, and you're like, ah, it's a heartbreaking moment, but it like, pays service to the movie, it works in that character moment, it's funny. Fantastic.
I also think the scene in the movie is so funny. The fact that this is all going down in a public restaurant and she's just crying like a dog, basically. She's whimpering like a little puppy. And
she's walking home and he's like, Pooh Bear.
Get in, Pooh Bear. Yes, exactly. It's just, yeah, those, I think there are so many things in this musical that stay so super true to the movie in such a way that it's not like too on the nose. It's perfect. And that's definitely one of them. I agree. That scene is amazing. Also, the style of that song is really fun. And Richard H. Blake sells it every single time. He is the perfect casting for Warner. Unfortunately, I did not get to see him in it. But the pro shot lives on and you can watch that.
Do you, before we get to like our favorite songs, do you have any songs that you skip on the cast recording?
All of the Professor Callahan songs.
So,
like Blood in the Water.
Blood in the Water is a skip. Again, these are songs that I think are good. Like, not, like, they work for the moment. But, yeah, it's like, okay, we do not need this. I can also tell you, okay, this is the first movie I ever saw Victor Garber in. And so, for me, he was, like, an iconic villain.
Yes.
But now I'm like, oh, Victor Garber is so sweet. He's so nice. He's, like, perfect.
But it's true. Like, my entire life until... maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, Victor Garber was Professor Callahan and nobody
villain.
Else.
Villain.
I don't really listen to There Right There if I'm going through the cast recording. I think it's a really fun scene. Obviously, that scene, again, super iconic in the movie when we find out that the pool boy is actually gay. It's amazing. I love that scene.
Don't you stop those last season. Prada Shoes on me, honey.
I love that scene. My brothers and I also quote that scene like all the time. Your boyfriend's name is Chuck. Like, it's so ingrained in my mind. And then another one that I just don't listen to is Ireland. Again, I love Orfe. I think she's amazing, but the song, kind of blah.
I know, we get Ireland and then like an Ireland reprise, and then it comes back in the Legally Blonde remix, which yeah. I think it's the best in the remix, but it's like, wow, we've spent 5 minutes talking about this and I do not care.
Yeah, a song. I also think that these songs are really long, which sometimes that works because there's a lot of plot that happens in the song. I'm thinking specifically of a What You Want.
I'll meet you there in Harvard with a book in my hand. Big sturdy book, big wordy book, full of words I'll understand and write. There is where you'll see it too. Warner, what you want is right in front of you.
What you want
is clear.
What you want
right here.
What you want.
That's a long song.
That's a long song that sometimes gets skipped. I agree. It sometimes gets skipped for me because it's so
long. The best part of What You Want is Andy Carl as the spring break man.
That's the most questionable part of What You Want.
I mean, yes.
Jamaica me crazy.
There's a lot in this show, I think, if we were to reevaluate it in 2020, or sorry, 2021, wow, here we are, would be changed, obviously.
Can we talk about the SpawnCon for a hot second?
Yes, JetBlue. We all
flew here on JetBlue. And then I also feel like in the MTV production, she's just, like, drinking Red Bulls, is that right?
Emmett is drinking Red Bulls when they're studying for Elle. He's like, what is this? My second, my third? And it's just a full shot of
logo,
Red Bull.
And I'm like, okay, this is SpawnCon.
Yes. I also think he gives her, oh, now I'm doubting, but when he gives her the 2-in-1 shampoo, I feel like it's like a herbal essence or something.
That I don't remember. That would be a good moment for, but it's kind of an insult to the 2-in-1 shampoo. So I don't know.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, that's true. Probably no brand would want to be associated with that insult.
I just like vividly remember the JetBlue was on the cast recording, but then the Red Bull in the filmed production. I'm like, I think that's literally just here for the SpawnCon.
Yeah. So what is, I mean, I don't even know if I can actually ask the question of what is your favorite song, because I feel like there's probably a top three.
Yes, I have four written down here.
Okay.
Because obviously. So, like, some honorable mentions. Chip on My Shoulder. I love. When he's like, Little Miss Woods, comma, I love Little Miss Woods, comma, L. I think it's like so funny, so clever. And that's like a nod to the moment with the resume and the pink and the perfume and scented. So fun.
She got a chip on her shoulder. Guess you never can tell.
I also love Whipped Into Shape. Whipped Into Shape.
Let's talk about Whipped Into Shape and the iconic jump rope moment.
Circle, circle, under, over, through, around.
Again.
Yes, I love Whipped Into Shape. I love that it looks like a workout video, and then you get it, everyone freezes in tableau, and you get like Professor Callahan and the law interns coming in to like discuss the case, and then it comes back around, and it's like, oh, and then everyone puts on their orange jumpsuits. It's like Boston Women's Correctional Facility.
And half of them are men that are doing the jump rope, which is so funny.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, it's like so, it's just, it's a great act two opener. It is a fantastic, just like energy moment. It introduces you to this character. I'm just thinking of the actress who plays her. I can't remember her name. Nikki Snelson. Does that sound right?
Yes. Yes. Nikki Snelson.
Nikki Snelson.
Yeah.
Just getting to do nothing for act one and just hanging out.
Yeah. But then she comes back with this insane act two where she's literally jumping rope for 6 minutes straight. I just think if you were to audition
it's crazy.
And you're in the ensemble, and obviously this scene is not in the movie, so you wouldn't even think that it would come into your mind. And you're being told, okay, guys, we have this song called Whipped Into Shape, which is going to be, like, Brooke's biggest number before the trial. And we're thinking that we're going to do it while you guys are jump roping, and also singing at your full range.
Crazy.
Insane.
And then like the tableau moments, they're all in like wacky positions, holding it for a minute longer while a scene is happening, for comedic effect. It's so funny. I think she's doing like a hip thrust or something. It's so funny. It's so smart.
I just imagine the rehearsal process and how many times someone was whipped with a jump rope.
Literally whipped into shape with it. What a workout to do that 8 times
you
a
should
week.
Do it. I want to see it.
I want to see. Oh my god.
Yeah,
I don't even know if I have a jump rope around here. It looks like, it looks crazy, but also so fun. If we learned it and then did it every day, that would be a great workout, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure at the beginning of the pandemic, like April, it was a TikTok trend that people were doing this, and I agree. I think it's really hard.
It's hard. It looks hard. I would do it.
Like, also not tripping. Like, that's something that you have to have in your mind, is to actually jump on the correct cue so that you don't fall. And if you fall, then you'll make someone else fall.
For some reason, jumping rope in a musical on stage, it just seems like the most difficult thing. People are doing crazy things on stage, but whenever someone goes to jump rope, I'm always like oh no. Is it in Holiday Inn where they're like double dutching, or they're doing it and then they're tap dancing, and I'm like, oh my god.
Because it can fully just wipe you out, like, and then you're on the ground.
Everyone's down. Everyone goes down. And you're like, you're watching these girls in the jump rope just like jumping so high. They're like, oh my god, I can't do it. I gotta do it.
Yeah.
Okay, what are your, do you have an honorable mention before we go into our like faves?
An honorable mention. Yeah, I'm gonna give my honorable mention to Bend and Snap, because that scene is so iconic in the movie. Obviously, the bend and snap works every time is a line that everybody has said at some point in their life. But I just love Paulette's moment in that scene. And there was recently, I think it was a TikTok video. Orfe, I think, is on TikTok, which is amazing to me that Orfe
I think so. I think you're right.
And she was talking about the fact that the riffs at the end of Bend and Snap were something that she had just tried to see if it would work. And then it stuck because it was so amazing. And Paulette is such a badass character. So to have this woman just be like, I'm gonna try this and see if my voice can handle it, and now it's on the cast recording and lives on forever, I love. I depend on my friend. Go Paulette, go Paulette. I depend on my friend. Go, go, go Paulette. I depend on my friend for the bend and snap. The bend and snap. Want the bend and snap. The bend and snap. With my bend and snap. The bend and snap. I'm the bend.
That's the thing, like the bend and snap, there is a musical number in that movie, and it is the bend and snap. And then to adapt it and make it, it's very different from what I think in the movie. And I remember the first time I heard it being like, oh, this is not what I thought, not what I expected. But it grew on me. And then when the boys come in, hey, waiter.
Damn. It's so good. The scene, I think this scene really makes the song in this situation. Yeah.
Let's go. My top three songs I've selected. Here we go. Take It Like a Man. The moment where Elle takes Emmett to go shopping for suits. This is
I
the
actually
love ballad.
Think that this is my favorite song in the entire show.
Really?
I know like, So Much Better is here. I am
we will
fully
get
aware,
to So Much Better. We will get to
but
So Much Better. But
I really think that Take It Like a Man, one, the scene, incredible. The scene
so
is
funny.
So good. Two, on the cast recording, Laura Bell Bunny and Christian Borle sound
so
good. So good. And I just think that the lyrics in that song and the entire execution is perfect. I love it.
The comedy.
The Love Subtext by Calvin Klein. Like, it's so good.
Who I truly want to give a shout out to in this song is Kate Weatherhead, who is the ensemble member, who is like the sales girl, who I love. I've seen, you know, every episode of Submissions Only because it's amazing. And then when I was, remember listening to the Finding Nemo cast recording after we saw it, I'm like, this, I would know Kate Weatherhead's voice anywhere. And it's her. But I really, Kate Weatherhead in the ensemble of this show, being the perfume sales girl, just being like skeptical. She comes back later as Chutney in this trial. Like,
Chutney.
So good. Love her.
I just also think like taking someone to a department store, again, this is a scene that does not happen in the movie, but Emmett does get sort of like a refresh of his clothes.
Emmett's character is expanded in the musical from the movie, I think.
Which I think is so great because he's actually such a good person, and that's like kind of rare in the movie of like bad people. I also think, and we can talk about this in Legally Blonde remix because I also know that that's in your top three, but Vivian has more of a backstory in this musical as well, and she is more for the women in the musical than she is in the movie. But back to
Vivian
Emmett
is who I would want to play. Vivian is who I would want to play if this I could be in this musical. Only Vivian. You come in for one song, you nail the note, and then you leave.
Exactly. But yeah, I love Take It Like a Man, and I love when Emmett changes in the department store because he literally goes behind this like little tiny screen, but you see the top half of his body. He's literally just putting on pants behind it. But it's the moment that they fall in love, kind of. And it's just the whole God, I love shopping for guys, watching them change right before my eyes. Don't watch me change. It's so good. It's so smart. And I really do think, as you were saying with the comedy, like this is one of Laurence O'Keefe and Nell Benjamin, their best comedic moments in kind of a serious love ballad. Like, it's amazing. Here's your chance to make it. Your chance to make it.
All comedy until that one moment where she's like, that's the best part. You know, it's still
you
in there.
Well, because he says that he looks like Warner. And she's like, no, it's you. And I'm like, ugh.
Love. That's love. That's love. And I think, I remember reading an interview with Christian Borle where he said, Jerry Mitchell, who directed and choreographed this musical, cast Christian Borle. He's like, I love you because you're not that good looking. So you'll be perfect for which is like, and Christian Borle's like, okay, rude, but but I do like, think,
I don't think that that character, I don't think Emmett should be a super good looking guy. I mean, we can talk about Luke Wilson.
Oh, Luke Wilson. No, but like, here's the thing. Christian Borle has an interesting face. He looks like an interesting person. You know what I mean? And that's why you don't have him playing a character like Warner.
No,
he would never suit that character. Like, Christian Borle is like much more of an interesting, like, he plays much more interesting characters, characters with different depths to him, to them. And I do, like, I agree with what Jerry Mitchell is saying. I don't think Christian Borle is unattractive, but like, I understand what he's saying, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just ranking my songs. I love Legally Blonde, and I love the remix, but I want to talk about the ballad. Of
interesting.
Legally Blonde.
I didn't think that you cared for this song. I mean,
no,
I love
this
it too.
Is the best. Okay, well, not my best, but this is the best song because it. This whole show has been funny, and it like saves its serious moment for this moment. It saves it the emotional gut punch for this one song. Everything else has been kind of tongue in cheek, funny comedy. Even things that are serious or funny, like they've made a murder trial funny. But this moment where you, like, when Elle says sings the lyric, some girls were just meant to smile, I can't. It's, like, the best lyric. It gets me every time. I love it so much. It's perfect. 'Cause you know that I'm so much in love. Also, them on either side of the door.
Yes, I was going to say, you cannot talk about the song without talking about the door. I remember specifically, again, in the search for Elle Woods, because they did have different cast members come in to perform songs with the girls that were trying out. Christian Borle did not come. He obviously was way too busy for this MTV TV show.
Didn't Andy Carl do it, though?
It might have been Andy Carl. Richard H. Blake was there. Actually, I think you're right. Was Andy Carl the understudy Emmett?
I think so.
Amazing. He is also, again, I think Andy Carl is probably a bit more attractive than a Christian Borle, but he also suits the character of Emmett.
I could
well.
See. Here's the thing. Andy Carl is an Emmett and a Warner at the same time, you know? He can go both ways. Get you a man who can do both, okay?
Yeah, but whoever came in to do it, like, they brought the door for the search for the next Woods because it's that important. And it is great because that's sort of what I was talking about the characterization of Vivian being a little bit different. This scene is obviously in the movie when Callahan hits on Elle, and does he kiss her in the musical? I think he kisses her, if I remember
correctly. Yes, he does. Because she says it in Legally Blonde.
Yeah, so he doesn't kiss her in the movie. But in both situations, Vivian sees this happen. And in the movie, she immediately, like, kind of dismisses Elle and is like, well, you're sleeping to be with your boss.
Right.
In the musical, it's, oh, no, he came
That's
at
not
you.
Okay.
Yeah, so I love that change for the musical and to have that be there forever and in licensed productions for high schools, I think is really important to have that scene. So And then obviously it leads to this whole song of her singing Legally Blonde.
Devastating. It devastates me. And then, I mean, the remix is great. For me, it's all about Legally Blonde over the remix. The remix, fantastic. I picture dance numbers to it. I love it. But Legally Blonde.
That's so funny. Because Legally Blonde did not make it in my top three, but the remix is in the top three.
Wow.
I just think there is nothing like the last minute and a half of that song.
You're right.
Enid comes in, Enid is like such a side character. She is literally, like, she's always around on stage and she's in the trial and everything. But when Enid comes in and does the back the hell out of her way, and then obviously like Brooke comes in and Vivian comes in and then Elle comes in, I'm like, this female empowerment that's happening on stage right now while Elle is wearing the pink dress and not the black or navy dress is what I'm here for.
She's being herself now. She's like, no, I'm not doing it on your terms. I'm doing it on my terms.
Back in the game, back in the fray, back the hell out of the way. Mister, you're fired.
What?
Guess whom I hired to represent me. You gotta be.
Yeah, you gotta be. Yeah, you gotta be. Yeah, you gotta be.
Legally
blonde.
Legally
blonde.
Legally
blonde.
Legally blonde.
I also love the whole bridge, I guess, of the song, like you said at the beginning of this episode, when Ireland comes back in and all of them dancing. And I love her parents. Her parents are actually my favorite side characters in the entire show. Get a picture. I love her mother. She is my favorite.
I think this is the perfect time to talk about the Greek chorus, because in the movie, she's at the sorority at the beginning and then you see them a little bit at the end. But it would be tragic to lose that, like, opportunity for comedy in this musical. So they have them be like Elle's imagination, Elle's
Greek
kind of conscience. They're like her conscience. They come to highlight certain moments. And then when they show up in Legally Blonde, the remix, it's like, no, I don't need my Greek chorus today. And she's like, no, Elle, we're here. It's us. The girls on Delta New.
We came to see a president of being. I also love them in Chip and My Shoulder, though, too. When they act as the calendar, it's so funny.
Yes, I agree. But yeah, I think Greek chorus, their prime moment, their key moment, their greatest moment, isn't so much better.
The hood.
When they're like at the top, okay, when so much better. When she like has the list and she passes it up and then they like pass it all to each other over the top. Amazing. So much better. It's just one of those songs. It's like so good. I feel like it's so boring to say. It's just so good. It's like a female empowerment moment. It's like she understands that she has value. And even though it's all going to be like shit on later, she understands in that moment, or she feels in that moment, wow, I can do this. I am smart. I deserve this. And it's amazing.
I also think the staging of this number is so simplistic that it's incredible and works so well. This is a moment that is so ingrained in my mind. One, because I've seen the pro shot, but two, when I saw it in person, I will never forget this scene. And it's when she sees that list and everyone is frozen and it's literally just like single spotlight on Elle looking at this list, and then everyone starts to like come back to life. Emmett is like tapping her on the shoulder. But it's just so, yeah, like boss moment for Elle. And I love what she's wearing. Yes. The jean jacket, the skirt,
the houndstooth skirt, the shoes. Amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, the movie is not a musical, but if there was gonna be a song, like, that would be the one that would be in the movie.
Like, I don't know how they wrote it, but I would imagine watching this movie and you're thinking, okay, what moments do we have to musicalize? And it's like, we have to musicalize this moment when she, like, this is like her, like, aha moment of like, I can do this. I am smart. And like, to make, you know, there's so many like huge numbers in this musical, but to make the Act One finale be the moment where she achieves something, where it's like a simple moment. She just like gets an internship, but that is the like climax, the high point of this musical, is like amazing. I love it.
Also, this song is so hard to sing. It's incredibly high. The last note, I'm pretty sure, is like 16 bars. It's insane.
Oh, oh, I'll even dance in black and white. See, I got nothing got to hide.
And you'll go home much better.
Hello.
Much better.
And soon all y'all gonna know much better.
I am so 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 much better. I am so much better
than before.
It's so long. Yes, on the cast recording, she sings it all at once, but in the, like, if you watch the pro shot, I think she takes a breath in the middle.
Yeah.
I also love, I think on the pro shot, she makes, like, three different choices on the So Much Better. You know, on the cast recording, it's just, like, So Much Better, So Much Better, So Much Better. But, like, she does, like, little riffs on that pro shot on the different So Much Betters. Amazing. Iconic.
I also just think of any woman that gets to play this character, whether it's in on Broadway, on tour, in a regional production, to stand in front of an audience and just sing is such a huge release of a moment and so exciting and so powerful. And the fact that it ends with her just like jumping in the air saying yeah and then lights out, it's amazing.
I think about that all the time. Sometimes when there's like a huge song that's like mostly a solo that a performer just... it's an amazing song to sing, and then they get to do it every night, and just how exciting that must be, how much of a dream come true it must be, how, like, just, like, a pinch me moment for whatever actress singing that song every night. I agree. My favorite part of the song, though, is, like, when she speaks really fast, it's like, maybe she's what you prefer, but last year I whisper. Like, that, like, all those quick lines. I'm too busy loving my name up. And then, like, the Greek chorus pops up. Up on this. So good.
And then when she takes a picture, hey, Mom. I love it. It's so good. Also, with the pink razor, I wanted a pink razor so badly.
Wow, what a time. What a time, the pink razor.
It's fine. I had a pink LG Shine, which was pretty close. It was, like, the same shade of pink to the razor.
Right.
But I'll never forget. I mean, we have to talk about the most iconic moment of So Much Better that I think only happened one time, but there is a video of it.
We are blessed that this video exists. It is when Laurel Bundy kicked her shoe off. Now...
amazing.
It is a great moment. I think she's just like getting really into it. She just like kicks and then her shoe goes flying. So she got one shoe on, one shoe off. She takes her other shoe off, throws it to the side, and just like belts it. I feel like it's a no-fly show. You know what I mean? It's like in Wicked where there's a no-fly and you like go off with the riffs. It's like Laura Bell's like, I gotta go off with the riffs because I lost my shoe. You know?
I think, does she not take off the second shoe? I think she
does. Yeah, she does. She takes the second one off and throws it.
It goes, like, into the... I think the first one went into the pit.
Yeah, it went out because, like, she was, like... It's so funny. It's so funny. It's a great video. It's, like, that's, like, live theater, and you see, like, the audience laugh, and you see everyone get excited, you know? It's one of those, like, once in a million moments.
Yeah. And it's also because the shoes that she's wearing obviously are heels, so you never know what could happen when you're going that hard for that song.
I know, you'd think they would be, like, more molded, more tight. I don't even know if it was that easy to come off. I'd be worried about her dancing in this, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
Personally.
A couple other songs that I just want to mention. Positive is such a fun dance number, but I don't think that it's comparable to the three that we just spoke on.
It's fine. It's fine, you know?
Yeah, and then another song that I randomly love is the finale. I love the tie-in of Oh My God, You Guys at the end when Emmett proposes. I love that Paulette is narrating the entire life story.
And wait, doesn't she propose to Emmett? Did I make this up? Doesn't she propose
to Emmett? Elle proposes to Emmett. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, did I say he? Yes.
Yeah.
She proposes to him. And he sings here. Oh My God, You Guys, which is such a great little flip on the very beginning of the show.
Emmett Forrest, please make me the happiest woman I know.
I just love I love that Paulette gets the chance to narrate this because I almost wish that Paulette narrated it in the movie. It's, again, very similar to how the movie is and the scene flow.
It's like title cards going up. It's like an L graduated here. And, you know, it's like the things that you can do in a movie that you can't do on stage. So you had to find a funnier way to narrate it. And by having Paulette do it, it just makes so much sense.
When Warner becomes a hand model because that's all he can do. But I also think, to talk about Jerry Mitchell for a second, he uses that sort of like stop motion freeze frame a lot in this musical. And it works really well. And in the finale is one. During So Much Better is another. Also in There Right There. There's a lot of just, and Whipped Into Shape.
Whipped Into Shape, a lot
of just like frozen while certain scenes are happening, and I think it's a really smart tool that I haven't really seen used very often in musicals.
I do think they use it well here. You know, this was his first thing he directed on Broadway. He'd choreographed a bunch on Broadway, but this is the first thing he ever directed and choreographed on Broadway. So for it to be his debut, and then for it to, I think, like, still have a place in the canon, like, still have such a lasting impact is pretty impressive.
Rethinking about Legally Blonde, when I haven't thought about this show for a very long time, made me think of another movie that I think would be so amazing as a musical, kind of the same tone. I would really like Lawrence O'Keefe to do it, and it's Miss Congeniality, and specifically for the one in a million moment. It would be so good.
Yes. There's a TikTok, I think Alessandra sent to me, of like this
I've
one guy.
I've seen it a million times. It's so good.
He does every person in that song, in that dance number of One in a Million. And you see it, like, he's doing the dance number, but then he's also like going backstage, like bringing the stuff, and he's the stage manager. Fantastic. Yeah, I agree. Miss Congeniality has that tone. It's comedy, but it's also serious. Like, and I think it would be fun to do, like, a spy crime. It would almost be, like, a mix of Legally Blonde and The Bodyguard, don't you think? Like, it's those two.
Wow. Two shows
right?
I love.
We love. Two shows we love. Two great movie to musical adaptations. Everyone thinks we're probably joking about The Bodyguard, but actually, like, literally.
No, like, in all seriousness, let's bring the tone down for a second to be serious. The Bodyguard is incredible.
Crazy. So good. So good. It was the Whitney Houston jukebox musical we deserved. We needed it. When it went bang and the lights went down right at the beginning, and then she just does like Queen of the Night, I'm like, I'm seeing Beyonce in concert right now. It's happening.
I've also never heard whatever theater that was in Toronto, Blair music, so loud. So it was the loudest show I've ever been in.
It was so much fun. It was fantastic. I loved it. I loved The Bodyguard.
But okay, I agree.
Kind of that, because it has like the like kind of crime mystery element that The Bodyguard has, but then the comedy element and like the rom-com element of the
Legally Blonde.
And yeah, I think it would be amazing. I agree. The One in a Million
Well,
moment.
Also, even just to bring like Lawrence O'Keefe into this, and like his Heather's score obviously is more
darker.
Like, not crime-based, but it's darker in comparison to Legally Blonde. So we know that he can do both, and I want him to do this. So
a great makeover moment in this show.
Michael Caine should be in this musical.
Yeah, yeah, he must. He must. I mean, I truly think, like, Miss Congeniality holds up. It really does. I haven't seen it in a while, but it holds
up.
Oh,
I've seen it kind of recently. I think it's in the same... What year did Miss Congeniality come out?
2002, 2003, something like that.
Okay, so it's like around the same time as Legally Blonde.
Wear the crown. Be the crown. the crown.
I also, as I said at the beginning of this episode, that I think Reese Witherspoon's most iconic role is Elle Woods. I think Sandra Bullock's most iconic role. I don't even
Correct.
Know. Is her name Macy?
Gracie Lou Freebush?
Gracie.
Her name is Grace, but her like fake name is Gracie Lou Freebush.
Yeah,
I recognized you from your lack of picture.
Another quotable movie. Like, there's those two movies are two
William
that
Shatner
I feel like,
and Candace Bergen. Sorry.
They should both be in the musical.
Okay,
like, this
okay. Let's not like give everything away. We're gonna have to dreamcast this one day. Okay.
No, but I just think that both of those movies were ones that like I grew up loving, and to see such a successful, in my mind, adaptation of Legally Blonde, I just need to see Miss Congeniality.
Well, they're both about like, this is another one where a woman realizes she can be pretty and smart. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the opposite, though. She starts, she's like, I can't be focused on, you know, fashion and beauty to, like, be successful in my career. And in the end, she realizes, no, I can do both. I can, like, every human being is multifaceted. I don't have to believe just one thing about each person. And, like, Legally Blonde comes at it from the opposite angle. And I think at the end of the day, like, they were two, like, really formative special movies to watch when we were young that came out at a great time for us. And I, like, love both of those movies.
Yeah. To get back on track a little bit on Legally Blonde, I do want to talk about Lawrence O'Keefe a little bit because we have talked about his music in different episodes, obviously, because he's done a bunch of stuff. But I really do think that this Legally Blonde score as a whole is so smart and such a great... Yeah. It just flows so well. It's a really great cast recording.
I agree. Like, the word that I was thinking when I was listening to it earlier today was how clever it is. Just how it combines everything. Like, the humor, the comedy, the seriousness, the jokes, but the... Just everything of it. Like, they captured the tone. He nailed it. He really nailed it.
I also think that he might be someone, and I haven't seen enough interviews with him to know, but he seems like someone that lets his actors really play with their voices on these songs. I just think about the riffs that are both in Heather's, because these are the two that I listen to the most, is Heather's and Legally Blonde. Sure. And I just think about the riffs and how much people get to really showcase their best parts of their voice. And I would have to believe that that's a collaboration with him and the cast.
Yeah, like the orchestrator and the music director, for sure. I agree. I think there's, like, room to play in these songs for... And I do think that the riffs are, like, serve the characters. Like, you think of someone like Orfe playing Paulette here. And she has, like, a crazy voice that can do so much. And anytime she's, you know, playing with her voice or manipulating it, it is to serve the character of Paulette. And even, like, when you think about what Laura Bell Bundy is doing at the end of So Much Better, like, those riffs and that note that she's holding, like, she's showing her power in, like, the way she's singing. It's not just riffs for riff's sake. It's like, okay, this is a character, this is a song, and how can we combine that to make something really powerful?
I also feel like this is one of the first times that I had heard riffs being used in a musical theater setting as opposed to a pop setting, which was kind of exciting and kind of, like, changed the game for these modern musicals, I think.
It is definitely, like, one of the first modern musicals that felt modern and felt poppy that I was introduced to, for sure.
Yeah. And same thing with what we were saying about how it is serious at times, but there's always that underlying hint of comedy. I think again about the finale and how that ends kind of seriously, but then the show actually ends with Andy Carl as the UPS man coming back.
Yeah, it's just like, you thought we were being too serious here for a second. Andy Carl's gonna come in his little short shorts and just, like, you know.
Yes. All right, well, that is our thoughts on Legally Blonde the musical. I feel like we have laughed and sung more on this episode than many others. That's how much this show means to us. And with that being said, it is now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what do you have for us?
Okay, my obsession of the week, I went on to Disney Plus and I watched a documentary series called...
Did you watch On Point?
I watched On Point, Tara.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard such incredible things about it.
Okay. I really just... Okay, so it was a documentary series about last year, 2019-2020 season at School of American Ballet, which is the feeder school for New York City Ballet. I've watched many a documentary about New York City Ballet and School of American Ballet before, so I was like, I know what I'm getting into here. But they focus a lot on the Nutcracker, the preparation for the Nutcracker, because... The kids, usually age like 13, like 6 to 13, get to audition and be in the Nutcracker. It is one of the only, like, one of the first opportunities to perform and to be on stage at Lincoln Center with all these amazing dancers. And they followed this one little girl, Sophia, I believe is her name. And she was, the older kids auditioned for certain things and she didn't get that and she didn't get this other thing. And I was just like, oh my God, Sophia, like, I was heartbroken for this little girl. She's not going to get a part in the Nutcracker. And then... They cast her to play Marie, which is obviously, like, the lead girl in the Nutcracker that takes the whole story. And I just started crying. I was, like, so emotional for this little girl.
But then, so I heard about this. I was talking to my friend Alex about it because she also watched it. And she was like, at the end of this documentary, I just sat and sobbed because then I realized that the pandemic hit and it was just heartbreaking.
My guess was it was supposed to be more episodes, but the final episode is them like having to go and take class from home. And, you know, they haven't really been back to class since. And it was pretty devastating because you think about these kids and you're following the little kids, but you're also following the older students who are in their final years at SAV. And dance and ballet specifically is an interesting career path because you train for it from the time you are like 5 years old usually. And you enter your career usually when you are 18. That's probably the oldest you'll be to enter your career, sometimes even younger. And the years of audition, that like final year, that your year of audition where you can be invited into the company is so important. And to lose that momentum at such an important moment of your career is just devastating. And I just, and I think about this for all performers, and especially for performers who are in school, like for performing, just to have this hit at a moment, like right as you're about to enter your career, it's just like all heartbreaking. It's all devastating. And I just, I don't know. It was like, it really impacted me. I've obviously, like, I'm not that level of dancer, but I've always like loved watching dance and loved the behind the scenes of dance. So watching this, I was obsessed, and watching them get to do the Nutcracker and watching these like children perform in it and be excited to like dance with these professional dancers, and watching the professional dancers like interact with the kids and talk to them, it was just like so meaningful. And the end was really devastating, honestly. But I would recommend the series. On Point, it's on Disney Plus. It's like 6 hour long episodes, and just like be ready with tissues and be ready to cry, because every episode you're just ready to go.
I've been meaning to start it because I've seen it, obviously, in the like rotation of watch this on Disney Plus, and I have not started it yet, but I want to watch it. That's so funny that you have a documentary, because I also have a documentary.
Oh my God.
The documentary obsession of the week, which is like very rare for us, I must say.
We're so cultured today.
Yes, look at us. I recently watched the documentary called Broadway Idiot on the story of American Idiot. And Steph, you need to watch this.
I've never seen this.
So good. So this documentary sort of takes us through the entire process of American Idiot. It came out in 2013, so obviously after the show closed. But it is really like a follow-along of Billy Joel Armstrong and his life. And it's so interesting. And this is a show that obviously we have heard, like, it wasn't a huge success, and it was very, I don't even know like how many people actually saw it. I know it came to DanCap, but
I love that cast recording though.
The cast recording is great, but watching specifically Michael Mayer and obviously the cast give this show their all and say in these interviews that it didn't matter what people thought because they were proud of the art that they were putting on stage. I'm like, this is what theater should be. Not caring about the reviews or the numbers or how many seats you sell, but just like feeling something. And it like made me emotional because obviously there's no theater right now. And just to see the heart of all of these actors was so inspiring. But to hear about how impactful American Idiot was to the guys in the band themselves was something that I had never heard that side of it before. And Billy Joel Armstrong said that his lyrics never felt validated until Tom Kitt took over and turned them into something different. And it made me think about the fact that, in the rock and roll world, you don't really get credited for your lyrics. You get credited for your guitar riffs or your drum solos. And to have that make something so important in his life is amazing. And to hear him say that theater gave him that feeling and nothing else, it's just like, I don't know, it was such a good documentary. And also, we do want to talk about Tom Kitt in a composer series, but I really think, as much as I think that his own stuff is incredible, his reorchestrations of these already made albums, like an American Idiot or a Jagged Little Pill, is, I think, where he thrives. Watching him turn certain songs into what they ended up being in the musical is incredible, and one of those is 21 Guns. And I have loved the version of 21 Guns from American Idiot the musical for years, but hearing the band talk about how they didn't realize how much they actually liked the song until it was reorchestrated in wow. that way is insane. Also, shout out to Rebecca Nyoma Jones for like the greatest vocal performance on that song. Watching the cast listen to themselves hear 21 Guns back and them just weeping, it was amazing. Also, the fact that Green Day was like, yeah, just come and perform it with us at the 2010 Grammys. And
I remember
we'll also
that.
Announce that it's going to Broadway. How exciting to be in that cast and be a part of that journey. I think of like the very first... not very first rehearsal, but when they were starting to do rehearsals and workshops. And obviously Green Day had to say yes to everything that Michael Mayer and Tom Kitt were proposing. And to see the guys react the way that they did, and also to see Adrian Armstrong, Billy Joel's wife, just like lose it and start weeping at the moments because this album was so important to his life and she knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So this documentary is on Google Play and iTunes if you would like to watch it in the States and Canada and probably internationally. But I highly recommend. It's so interesting and it really gave me a different perspective on Green Day, but also like the musical theater process of how you start a show from the ground up, a jukebox musical. It was amazing.
I would definitely love to watch that. I do know, like, I knew the Green Day album before it was a musical, obviously, and it's funny, like, Billy Joe and, like, the people who wrote those songs, they could take it only so far in terms of storytelling. But then when it became a stage musical, they just, like, took what they had already built. Because it did have a narrative, it did have a story. And we're like, okay, we're going to take this and we're just going to, like, blow it up. We're going to make it even better. We're going to take what the groundwork that you put and, like, make it amazing. And I think...
But I agree, because like, I think that those songs on that album, like Boulevard of Broken Dreams, Wake Me Up When September Ends, Holiday, we know all of those songs, like, way before this was there's musicalized. Like everyone
like
knew
the
that.
Jesus of Suburbia, like, storyline in there. Like, there's, like, a huge chunk in there that I knew. And, yeah, to take that and musicalize it and, like, stage it is so exciting. Like, I can't imagine someone who wrote that song not expecting that, and then to see what other people did with your words and your music and to make it so much more, can't even imagine.
And the doc goes all the way up until he plays St. Jimmy, so wow. You see like little clips of him doing it and how Michael Mayer says, you know, my biggest dream is to see you in this show because it's you and I need you in it. And he said that he saw a little like sparkle behind his eyes. And then he called him the next day and was like, I'm not an actor. These people are way better singers than me, but let's do this. I want to do this. And I think he actually went in for the final 3 weeks before the show closed to say goodbye to the show.
I think he would go in and out to try and like make the show money, you know, because...
You do what you gotta do.
You know, sting it up. Sting it up, okay?
Yeah. Well, that was our obsession of the week. I can't believe we both chose documentaries. It's very not on brand for us, but I'm proud of us for branching out. And now we each have something to watch of each other's obsession. And that was also our thoughts and feelings on Legally Blonde the Musical. If you have seen this musical or The Pro Shot, let us know in the comments below on YouTube. And let us know what your favorite song is, because I'd actually like to know what some of your favorite songs are by tweeting us or sending us a message on Instagram at Off2BWayPodcast.
And you can find the podcast anywhere podcasts are found. Plus, you can subscribe to us on YouTube. We would love it if you commented or liked or left us a rating and review on Apple iTunes.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.